America's backstory is a whitewashed mythology implanted in our collective memory. That's the bold argument that author and political commentator Michael Harriet makes in his book, Black AF History, The Unwhitewashed History of America. Harriet retells the story of America from the perspective and experiences of Black people, moving their history from the margins to center stage. I spoke with Harriet when his book came out last fall.
So much of what you include in your book is going to be eye-opening to people. Why do you think that the history that we learn is so far off from the history that happened? Why is it so different? And I know that some of that was intentional, but do you think that explains all of it?
No, I think one of the things that we don't talk about enough is how relatively new Black studies or the idea of Black history is. The Black studies movement really started in the late 70s, early 80s. And so the people who taught social studies when I was growing up did not learn any Black history, right? And the people who taught them didn't learn any Black history. And so the Black history that was eventually included in social studies or American history was put in and inserted so that it would not conflict with all of the other stuff that they had been learning. You can't insert the fact that, you know, George Washington enslaved dozens of people and Thomas Jefferson never freed a slave and enslaved hundreds of people. If you had been teaching for generations that he is the father of democracy and the architect of our American-style freedom, right? The two just don't comport. So they just put in the stuff that was Black, but that reaffirmed the lessons that they were already teaching.
So there are so many different people in your book that I had never heard of before. We obviously don't have time to go into all of them, but I wanted to touch on just a couple. And we have to talk about Esteban, because how there has not been a whole series of movies? How we've had a whole series of Indiana Jones movies and not a whole series of Esteban movies, I don't know. As you point out, this is a guy who explored more of North America than Lewis and Clark. He did it before the Jamestown settlers arrived. And you say the elders of the Pueblo Indians in New Mexico described their first encounter with European colonizers by saying, "The first white man our people saw was a Black man." Can you tell us how Esteban ended up being the first colonizer, European colonizer, that many people in North America saw?
Well, so Esteban came on a colonizing trip with Spanish conquistadors, and they were essentially rejected by the Apalachee Indians. They were kind of Apalachee Native Americans. And so Esteban was one of the five survivors of that mission, and he traveled from South Carolina to Florida to all the way through what we call New Mexico, eventually down to Mexico City, and then was chosen by the Spanish king to lead an expedition over the Sierra Madre Mountains. So it is very conceivable that Esteban the Moor saw more of America than anyone in history before him on this continent. But it is an interesting story when you put it in the context of the belief, even now, that the first Black people to arrive in America came in 1619.
So here, another person that a lot of people have never heard of and really should is the King of Mali. And the reason why people probably should have heard of them is because he was and still is considered to be the wealthiest human being in all of human history. Can you tell us a little bit about Musa the First?
Yes, commonly known as Mansa Musa, he was a person who was in Africa, who was an African chieftain, or what we would call a king. Sometimes we refer to tribes. Mansa Musa conquered much of his surrounding area, and then because he was Muslim, he took a pilgrimage to Mecca and took so many people and so much gold that it essentially crashed the economy of Europe at the time.
absolutely incredible. You make the point, coming back to American history, you make the point very convincingly in this book, I think. And I'm going to quote you here. You say, slavery was an American idea, not a product of the time. No law was passed in England that legalized slavery. France's Code Noir was similar, but it would come two decades after Virginia's Declaration. From its inception, America was always a pyramid scheme where the wealthy benefited from the labor of the poor. Why was this point, that slavery was uniquely and inherently American, why was this so important?
Because I think it's called, we call it slavery, which kind of flattens it out and equates it with, you know, all kinds of slavery, from indentured servitude to forced marriage to prisoners of war. All of that can be, you know, simplified by just calling it slavery. But what America did was create a systemic system that was embedded in the Constitution, that was intergenerational, inheritable. It was constitutionally enforced. It was supported by the government. And most of all, it was race-based. And that was, all of those factors combined was unique to America. There were some places where, you know, if you take ancient Roman history, right? Those people were still considered humans, and they were governed by human laws, not considered chattel. There were paths to freedom in Africa and other civilizations, but America offered no path to freedom, and it was embedded into the structure of the building of this nation.
And which you, again, make the point was a uniquely American idea. And you reinforce not just this, but many other ideas in the book with these little quizzes you have at the end of each chapter. Not just that, but you make a lot of jokes. The footnotes especially are filled with some pretty funny, sarcastic remarks. Why was that crucial? I mean, because it really seemed to be crucial that you have some levity in this book. Why?
Well, I think that, first of all, this history of Africans in America is brutal when told straightforward. And what I wanted to do is, you know, not make it so traumatic to read. And I wanted to also use this book to relate to people who wouldn't necessarily normally read a history book in the ways that we communicate with each other. So, you know, in Black America, we could be at a funeral that is incredibly sad, but we'll still make jokes in the back of the church, right? And it's a way of dealing with trauma and a way of making the book more accessible. I didn't just want it to be a book of scholarship that people who were interested in the minutia of history could read. I want it to be a book, an exercise in storytelling and an examination of America's past, and for everyone to enjoy it.
So what do you hope people take away from this?
I think that one of the things that I wanted people to know about history and American history specifically is that the story of Africans in America, when you think about where they came from, why they were brought here, how they arrived with nothing, not a language, not family. They were brought here with the explicit purposes to extract their labor and their intellectual property, and then for them to die. And if you think about how many millions of those people came here, when you look at today, it really is the greatest story ever told in the history of this planet. And if you want to tell the story of America, if you included that, you wouldn't have to mythologize. You wouldn't have to whitewash it, right? And I wanted people to realize that what we built, the institutions, the communities, the culture, the music, the art, the families, that is a great story. And it is a triumph of not just Black people, but what people can build as a community.
That's author and political columnist Michael Harriott. His book is called Black AF History.